UK Wine Show, show number 207. Alan Johnson on Palliser Estate and Martinborough. G'day, and welcome to this week's UK Wine Show. This week we're in New Zealand's Martinborough wine producing district with Alan Johnson, winemaker at Palliser Estates. One of my favourite New Zealand wine producers. Palliser do a great age-worthy Riesling, which I love, and a very good reasonably priced Pinot Noir. Anyway, we're going to be talking with Alan about great oversupply in New Zealand. The chat is quite wide-ranging. We talk about everything from hens and chickens affecting the quality right through to the loss and what it is. Well, this week's been pretty busy for me. I think I need a nice quiet week, but I'm not going to get one. Next week, I'm going to be out of the office for most of the week at the London International Wine Fair. Got a few people to see and wines to drink. More training. We've taken on quite a few people in the last few hours to meet demand in our wine tasting business. So things are pretty hectic there as well. So it's going to be another full-on week. Also been busy putting lots of new racking into where we store our wines. We've got loads and loads of beautiful long span racking. I know you probably don't care about it, but for a person who's had to move cardboard boxes around to pick wines, this will make life a lot easier. Okay, let's crack into this week's show though. And first up though, we've got our mystery grape variety. As usual, I'm going to give you a clue now, and then I'm going to give you a second clue just before the interview with the answer at the end of the show. See if you can work out what the mystery grape variety is. It is one of the big grape varieties in the world. So our mystery grape variety makes luscious, smooth, fruity wines. And in spite of this, it's still perceived as one of the world's great underdogs, most often being unfavourably compared to prized Cabernet Sauvignon, its more austere and frequently blended partner. Planted throughout southwest France and much of the rest of the world, its name means little blackbird in Bordeaux, so called because it's said that its grapes are the first that the blackbird likes to guzzle down first, and the bird's colour resembles the grapes. Have we think about that? I'll give you another clue just before the interview with Alan Johnson, but next up we have the news with Jane.
Cheers, Chris. A scientific study by the Institute of Vine and Wine Sciences in Bordeaux has shown that white wine in plastic packaging shows clear signs of oxidation when stored after 6 months. The study compared glass with bag-in-box, single-layer PET and small multi-layer PET. Stored in laboratory conditions, researchers analysed the level of gases, that's oxygen, carbon dioxide and sulphur dioxide, that were contained in the wine, along with its taste and colour intensity, at regular intervals over a period of 1 year. The study concluded that the analysis of white wine showed convincing results within 6 months, with significantly increased penetration of oxygen into the wine and a corresponding decrease in the levels of carbon dioxide. After 6 months, the white wine clearly oxidised in single and multi-layer PET, as well as the bag-in-box, but it did remain stable in the two glass bottles. Some initial signs were beginning to emerge in the red wine, but it was too soon to draw any definite conclusions. Further tests will continue into the second year of the research.
The report showed that red wines were looking okay after 12 months in all the formats. Free sulphur, that is sulphides available to mop up any oxidising oxygen that seeps through the bottle, is doing its job, if somewhat diminished. The explanation why red wine holds up much better than, say, the white wines is because they've got a higher level of polyphenols. Usually these are tannins and colour, and they themselves mop up the oxygen and give the sulphites some reinforcements, helping to preserve the wine. Reading the report, it does seem to be geared towards being positive for glass. As most people know, bag-in-the-box and PET often have much higher levels of sulphur than glass bottles for this very reason, that they do oxidise and let a bit more oxygen in. Also, remember, bag-in-box and PET are bottled in the UK and sold to consumers almost immediately, so oxidation isn't really a problem. No one really ages bag-in-box wines for a couple of years to see them mature. As usual, the best thing if you are going to take one of these more unusual formats is to buy it from somewhere who sells the wine quite quickly and quite thoroughly. So supermarkets are a perfect place to buy plastic bottles and bag and box. What's the next story, Jane?
Well, production of English and Welsh wine more than doubled in 2009 to 2.5 million litres. That's up from 1 million bottles in 2008. Amazingly, red production went from 300,000 bottles to 700,000 bottles, hitting an all-time high. According to Julia Trustam-Eve of English Wine Producers, many new vineyards came into production for the first time, which added to the volume, and the weather conditions in autumn helped turn the vintage into a bumper crop.
Poor old English producers have had a hard few years in the past, and 2009 was a great year for wine production. It may not be the barbecue summer that the Met Office had warned us all about, but it's a lot easier to produce quality English wines in a year like 2009. The red wine production looks awfully high to me. I wouldn't be surprised if the number also included maybe some Pinot Noir or Pinot Meunier destined for sparkling wines. What's the last news item about, Jane?
Finally this week, glass manufacturer Owens Illinois Inc. has launched a new range of lightweight, lean and green wine bottles, weighing in at less than 330 grams, which is 27% less than a traditional wine bottle. The bottles will be manufactured in California, and the company claims there is a saving of more than 89,000 tons of carbon dioxide for every million bottles produced. The lightweight bottles will also help decrease shipping expenses for producers and retailers. The company is also making a range of Bordeaux and Burgundy bottles that weigh 360 grams. That's it from me, but don't forget to check out our website at 3050.co.uk.
Usually these super lightweight bottles are a good thing, and as long as US producers start to send us these light bottles, I'm all for it. Shipping by sea is not normally based on weight, but volume. So shipping within the US is probably the biggest benefit of these lightweight bottles, as wine bottles should be shipped to the UK via boat. But once they do get here, these lightweight bottles are a significant advantage to the UK because we don't have any use for green glass. If you're not sure what I mean by that, we've done a load of shows in the past with Glass Wright and Helen Jenkins. We've actually been to Owen Illinois' factory in North London, if anybody's interested in those previous shows. Now, next up, I did promise you the spotlight, and I was promising you a book about What Price Bordeaux, and it is a really good book, but it's taking me so long to get through it. I've been really snowed down, so I haven't actually managed to complete the book, so I will be finishing that and writing the review up, hopefully, in a couple of weeks' time. But I did mention when I was walking through New York, I stopped off at a bookstore and they were selling loads of different wine magazines. And I do want to review some of those wine magazines, particularly before they get too old, and give you an idea of the different types of magazines you may want to subscribe to. So I picked up things like Wine Spectator, Wine Enthusiast, Decanter, but a load of other smaller magazines you may not have heard of. This week, though, we're going to be starting off with Harper's Wine and Spirit. Now, Harper's Wine & Spirit is a subscription service, and it costs at the moment £161.20 for a year. Now, that's a fortnightly magazine designed for the wine trade, and it's been going since 1878. Editorially, it features news, events, analysis, interviews, and opinion, all with a trade focus. The articles are detailed and give a good overview of the industry from an industry perspective, so it's certainly not a magazine for those who just want to know about what Bordeaux wine to drink, etc., because they don't really get into that. As a fortnightly, it's an excellent read, but the subscription does give you quite a bit more benefits, including Harper's Directory, which I find really useful. It's a full directory listing of all the businesses in the UK, their contact details, their key people, and I use it a lot. If someone says, where can I get such and such a wine? I look it up and I can find the importer of that wine incredibly fast. So it's probably the most useful thing that's not the magazine itself. Although they do really, really good supplements. Usually they produce these supplements just before a big generic trade tasting. So maybe it might be wines of New Zealand or wines of Australia. And they'll produce a supplement on Australia and New Zealand just before that. And what that does is it gives you a really good understanding of what's going on in that wine region, just before you go off and taste a load of the wine. So that's quite a handy thing. Probably the last thing is that they also do it in PDF format. So if you are a subscriber, you can receive it in PDF format. And whilst I think you're not supposed to email it around, we often send it around to different people in the company, so everybody gets a chance to read the magazine. It is, as I say, in PDF format, so if you've got a laptop or even one of these newfangled tablets that are out and about these days, you may be able to read it on the train on the way home. If you're looking for any news, they do have a pretty good website. It is, again, tradie focused, but it's harpers.co.uk, and they have a lot of short news articles there. The magazine itself tends to go into a bit more detail than the online content, and it's a bit more thoughtful in the magazine. But the online content does have some quite quick stories, so if you're just trying to keep up with what's going on, they're not a bad place to look. Harper's Wine Spirit in its current form appeared first on the 20th of January 2009 as a merging of Wine and Spirits and Harper's. Harper's, which had been previously owned by Nexus Media, was sold to William Reid in November 2008, and the relaunch took many of the positive parts from both the magazines into one. And it also helped Harper's a wee bit because they were struggling to keep the quality of their magazine up at that point, but the relaunch seems to have fixed all those sort of issues. Now, personally, I do subscribe to Harper's, and we get it every fortnight, and I normally have a good read through it. I don't read it from cover to cover. There's a lot of stuff I don't read, but the interviews are very good, and it's quite a nice magazine to get if you're interested in getting that. So that's one magazine down. We will be covering the other magazines that I read over the next few while, and next up we have our mystery grape variety. Now, our mystery grape variety produces glorious wines in Saint-Emilion and Pomerol, on the right bank of Bordeaux's, and it includes some of the more expensive wines of Chateau Petrus. In Chile, its soft plum aromas are a favourite to many consumers, and it can adapt to a wide range of soils and microclimates, but it buds, flowers, and ripens relatively early, so spring frosts are a danger. It does have thick skins and is liable to rot in wet vintages. However, its lowish fruit tannins make an excellent early drinking wine. That should pretty much give it away. It is one of the big classic wine grape varieties of the world. Have we ponder about that? I will give the answer at the end of the show. But next up, we have our interview. This time, it's with Alan Johnson from Palliser Estate in Marlborough. We're going to be talking to him about the New Zealand wine situation, what oversupply is doing. We also reviewed the 2010 growing season. I interviewed him just before picking started, back in April, I think it was, when I was in New Zealand. And we also talked to him about the Wairarapa wine region. Palliser Estate is in Martinborough, which is part of Wairarapa. We even talk about things like hen and chickens. So have we listened to the interview and see what you think. Hi, I'm here with Alan Johnson from Palliser Estate in Martinborough. How are you, Alan?
Oh, good morning.
Excellent.
Well, afternoon, it's great.
Afternoon, actually, yeah. Yes. Yeah. We're here. I've just come in from over the hills, Rimitaka's, and got stuck behind some nice lorries. They were mowing the lawn, so that was quite fun, 20 minutes waiting for them to pull over. But you're right next to Wellington, aren't you, here?
Yeah, we're just 1 hour's drive from Wellington, Chris, so over the Rimitaka's. It's a bit of a mountain to climb. Yeah.
It's quite a windy one. I remember coming over on my motorbikes years ago, and it was great fun.
It is, absolutely. It's 555 metres elevation at the saddle, so it's a decent little climb over.
Okay, but it's quite an important part for Masterton and Martinborough.
For the grape growing region, the range here, the Rimitaka's, provide us with a rain shadow effect. Our predominant weather is from the west. Mm-hmm. The weather systems predominantly come across the Tasman, and the rain falls on the west coast, and we are one of the driest, well, certainly the driest viticultural region in the North Island, about 700 millimetres of rainfall a year, mostly winter predominant.
Oh, that's quite handy, isn't it? It also cuts the wind out, because when we landed, I came in from Sydney and the pilot just sort of went straight under the ground at a hurrah of nut. And it wasn't even that, it was windy last night, but it wasn't over the top.
Yeah, it depends. We can have strong northwesterlies, strong dry northwesterlies here. So that's really equinoxial gales. You'll get that mostly in the spring, but sometimes in the autumn as well. But it's something we contend with from time to time.
Yeah, but you don't call it windy Wairarapa, do they?
Not like Wellington. No, not like Wellington. I think it gets wind from the west and the south, really, Wellington. And being on the Cook Strait, the wind is funnel through there.
Yeah, it's great fun for flying kites. So we're here at Palliser. Palliser's one of the more earlier established vineyards in the region. When did Palliser start up?
Well, the grapes were planted in 1985. The very earliest vines were planted about 78, 79 in Martinborough. So we started slightly later than that. First wines made, Palliser wines, were 89. And I've actually been here at Palliser since 91, so a fair length of time now.
And what sort of grapes do you grow here?
We have five varieties, Pinot Noir, which is our largest planting, Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay, Riesling and Pinot Gris. And so Sauvignon Blanc and Pinot Noir are our two largest productions. We also make some bubbles made from Pinot Noir and Chardonnay.
Is it traditional method or...?
Yeah, it's in the Champenoise method.
Okay. I didn't see any kit for that.
We do make the base wine here, tourage here. We don't disgorge on site. That's sent away to a disgorger because obviously that's quite a lot of kit, quite expensive. So they'll do the disgorging and liqueuring and ship the wine back to us.
Cool. I actually didn't try. I tried quite a few of your wines earlier, but I didn't try your fizz. So maybe I'll have a wee snifter of that on the way out.
Absolutely, yeah.
Excellent. And who owns Palliser? Because you're part of the family of 12.
That's correct, yeah.
But you're not a family business.
Well, we're a collection of families, one would say. we in fact have close to 200 shareholders. And there's probably five or six... persons who would own, 50-60% of the company, with the balance owned by the smaller shareholders. We're not family owned, but there's, as I say, the best I can say is lots of families, I suppose, really, and particularly the more dominant shareholders. Yeah,
you're not really listed it though, are you?
No, but the shares are traded. Through one another, Wellington share brokers or through our secretary. Yep. So, the shares tick over from time to time.
What are they trading at?
I think the last trades were at $4.25.
$4.25. And what sort of return do you get on that?
It's variable. The wine market is quite a lot tougher in New Zealand in the last 2 years. We have made a profit from the very early days. If I quote something about profit margin, I'd get it wrong. So leave it there.
Okay, no, that's fair enough. It is a bit of an oversupply situation, particularly for Marlborough wines. How's Martinborough feeling?
All that occurred really with a big harvest in 08, particularly out of Marlborough. Yeah. Two things, quite a big increase in land coming into production. And secondly, just a bigger harvest, more tons per hectare. So from memory, it was about 40% up on the previous year. Yep. And while our market for New Zealand wines has been growing,
it's a big step.
Sort of maybe 15% or an annum or something like that, it was a bit bridge too far, really. And then the 09 harvest, pretty much the same size as the 08. So,
but there was a lot of dropping of fruit in the year.
There was, yes.
But it was just more land coming online.
That's correct, yeah. Bigger production area. So really we've had now 2 years really where the supply has exceeded demand and, wineries have to, sell their wine. A lot of these New Zealand wineries are quite young. They've got quite a lot of borrowings and, they've got to service their debts as well as the... just ongoing costs, so there's been quite a bit of pressure for wineries to, keep the cash flow going, and enough of them are offering good prices out there in the market. It does take market share away from the other wineries, and other wineries having to respond to the general market.
Is there any consolidation going on? Like, there must be the odd person who's going a bit broke, going bankrupt.
There have been a number, but... few people have made comments to me that they think that really going to see more consolidation in the next year or two, really. I think, people have been hanging in there, sort of hanging in with their fingertips and fingernails to some degree. But I think, things are probably still another perhaps year away, 18 months before I think we see supply-demand come back into the balance a bit, really.
Is that because you're just still dropping tonnage or dropping sort of crop levels? Or is it going to be a case that some land that's been converted to vineyard is going to go back to...
Well, there's going to be a bit of both, I think, but the export of New Zealand wine is still growing, so the market's still growing, and it's just going to be a matter of time, I think, before that we get back into balance, basically, the market reaches the point of production, basically, and New Zealand being, really temperate climate, our yields vary year to year quite markedly quite often, and we could have a year where production's quite low, and that's... Very suddenly, there'll be a shortage of grapes in the market. So,
famine and feast, isn't it?
Yeah, you really can't pick it. But,
You said that sales are growing at about 15% year on year for New Zealand. Is China becoming a key market for you guys? I know in Australia, they're really pinning their hopes on that to try and get them back into balance.
Well, for Palliser, we've got a good market in Hong Kong, a company called Watson's. And they run a very professional business, and our sales have been growing year on year quite quite well. They've a good retail business there. Going back a few years, most of the market would have been expats, but now the ethnic Chinese dominate the sales. So we see Hong Kong and China mainland as being quite important markets, really. But it's a matter of picking who you're with, really, to go through into the Chinese mainland.
Sure. And what sort of wines are popular from your point of view?
Really, Sauvignon Blanc would be our most popular varietal. Uh-huh. Pinot Noir as well. That seems to be the case mostly around the world for Palliser, our two leading varieties.
Yep.
People seem to, for good and bad, know New Zealand for Pinot Noir and Sauvignon Blanc. In many ways, it's a case of trying to get them onto some of the other varieties, which we do equally as well, Riesling, Chardonnays.
I really like your Riesling, and it ages quite nicely.
It does.
I've had quite a few of them that are sort of 5-6 years old, and they drink quite nicely. I've got a few bottles in my collection at home.
Yeah, it's probably our best aging wine, in fact, actually. And after 2 or 3 years in the bottle, they start getting that secondary aromas, but they still have the freshness there as well. I think it's a lovely time to drink them at maybe 3 years old. But they'll drink well for 10 years, or most of them.
Okay, you're saying you don't have too many new varieties, like you've added Pinot Gris recently or about 6 years ago.
Well, it's probably 12 years ago now, actually.
Oh, really?
But, as a winemaker, I'd be interested in growing some other varieties. But Palliser realises that it's a very competitive world out there, and if we can get 2, 3, or 4 of our wines on a shelf in a wine shop, you're doing well. If you turn up with a portfolio of 16 wines, you're probably only still going to get 2 or 3 or 4 wines on the shelf. So, there's the one variety which I think has good potential for New Zealand would be Grüner Veltliner. Some of the Austrian examples are really impressive. It's a variety which does a range of different qualities, really. But, the best ones have got, sort of a fruitfulness and an aromatic quality, which makes me think New Zealand could do those very well.
We're just about to come into the 2010 picking season. You said you're going to start picking in, in a couple, 2-3 weeks' time?
Well, about 3 weeks' time, probably. After Easter this year, I'd say. Probably about 10th of April, and normally we'd start around the 1st of April. So, we're running late. The whole of New Zealand's running pretty late this year. We had a very cold October, I think it was the coldest in 60 years, and that just delayed, the flowering.
Yeah.
And, you generally have a standard 100 to 115 days between flowering and harvest, and, so it just puts a whole season.
Is that a problem for you guys? You don't have frost issues or...?
Not generally autumn frost, but, there was still potential there. But, I think, we're on our way. Our yields are a little bit below long-term average, so, in a later year, you don't want to be carrying a big crop.
Mm-hmm.
Because, when it's getting cooler at the end of the season, you don't get quite as much photosynthesis happening, really. I think we'll be fine. It's a little patient this year.
Yeah, and the crop level this year, same as last year? Or?
Oh, for us, we're down probably 20% on what we'd say is a long-term average harvest.
Yeah, that's not necessarily a bad thing, though.
Yeah, we had some cool periods during the flowering season, and we had a set which has resulted in a lot of what we call hen and chickens, small and large berries,
mm-hmm.
or the French say Miller and Dash.
Yeah.
And that just means lower bunch weights.
Will you take out those little, are they green ones?
Sometimes in red varieties you get hard green ones. More commonly you get small berries that ripen before the large ones do.
Oh, okay.
And often with Pinot Noir, those will ripen first, and often they can split and shrivel away.
Does that have problems with disease pressure?
Can do, but it's more a case of dropping the yields down.
So given that it was a problem at the beginning of the season, does that mean that likely you're going to get more concentrated fruit this year, so the quality of the fruit will be better?
Really too early to call, really. But I think, things look like they'll have a pretty normal sort of balance in the wines, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Acidity's maybe a little bit higher than normal. We're really just going to have to see how things come out. It's often the midsummer is a bit cooler, but we're getting some nice weather in this later summer, early autumn. So
Pelliser has been here now for quite a while, you said, in Martinborough, but there's some other wine regions around in the Wairarapa. It's called the Wairarapa, isn't it?
The Wairarapa, yes. So we're Wellington region, but it's, Wairarapa is sort of a sub-region of the Wellington region.
Is it other grapes grown in the Wellington region apart from in Wairarapa?
There's a small amount of planting over on the Kapiti Coast.
Oh, okay, and that's sort of the west coast.
The west coast, yeah. There's, I would say there might be 20 hectares in total over there.
All right, so what are the other wine regions in the Wairarapa?
Well, Martinborough really was, in modern times, was the first region to plant. There were vineyards up near Masterton around the turn of the century. Mm-hmm. So there's an old history here of that, but...
They were planted Syrah as well.
Syrah and Pinot, as we understand, and I think there were some Bordeaux varieties as well. There's two vineyards up there that are written about. They were pulled out. Marston became a dry area. There was a vote for controlling liquor laws, liquor sales in New Zealand, either prohibition, reduction, or status quo, and Marston became a dry area. And as I understand it, sort of a test case went before the judiciary, and he said you have to pull your vines out, which was he ruled an error, evidently, because there was cases up in Auckland of Corbin's winery. It was in a dry area, right, them on the boundary of the dry area, and across the railway line they used to have their wine shop, so made wine in the dry area and sold it in, next door in the wet area. But so a long history there. So after Martinborough, there was vines planted up around Gladstone, so which is really up the Rimahunga River from we are adjacent to the Rimahunga River. Mm-hmm. And as you follow the Rimahunga River up, come up to Gladstone, and one of the first ones up there was Gladstone Vineyard. Gladstone Vineyard's been there for since the early 90s, I think, from memory. Mm-hmm. And then in more recent times, just slightly north of them on river terraces, similar to the sort of land we have here in Martinborough, a number of other vineyards have been planted. That area there is often known as Dakin's Road, after the road they're planted on.
The key thing about Martinborough is, or the Wairarapa anyway, is that it all seems to be on old riverbeds.
Yeah, predominantly the plantings are. It's a big, wide, expansive valley that's open to the south. In the Martinborough Terrace, which we're on, is an old upraised river terrace. River gravel's overlain by windblown loess. The same with Gladstone, about 25k northeast of us on the Rimahunga River. And then there's a number of vineyards a little bit to the north of Marston as well, which are also on old alluvial sort of river.
What's loss, by the way? Just
It's windblown, very fine windblown silt material. Yeah, very... Used to be dust at one time, you know. When you get enough dust, it lands on the ground and forms loss.
What's the characteristics of it?
In our case, it's it forms a sort of a loamy clay type textured soil.
Mm-hmm.
It's moderately fertile. I guess it depends where that wind-blown materials come from, I guess. But it gives you water holding capacity near the surface. And in our case, a lot of our soils are 400 to 600 millimetres of this sort of topsoil, subsoil, loamy clay over gravels, and that just gives you a nice water holding capacity.
Yep.
You know, the soils generally dry out in the summertime, and depending on the year, some years we don't irrigate, some years we do irrigate, because if we don't, the vines will defoliate before harvest.
Okay. Do you have any issues with water supply?
We're fairly lucky here. Our water comes from underground aquifers, but... Some of those are pretty much fully allocated now. So, you know, there is limits on the water availability. But.
I think we'll wrap it up there, Alan. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you.
Right, that's the interview. Alan was one of the first winemakers I actually ever spoke to. You know, when you first get into the wine, these winemakers are people you never, ever get to see. You just get to see the people at the front of the shop serving the wines or some cellar staff. But Alan was the first bloke who ever took me under his wing and had a nice long chat to me about wine production. I really appreciated it. And he pitched it in a level that someone such as myself, who's into the science of wine, but didn't know too much about it at the time, I could understand. So I was really pleased to get him back on the show. Next week, we're going to take a bit of a departure from wine regions, and we're going to look at wine blogging and social networking. We're going to be talking with Ryan Opaz. Ryan is a prolific Twitterer. In fact, he pretty much fills up my Twitter stream. I follow quite a few people, but Ryan is one of the blokes who really just writes a lot of tweets. He also organises a European Wine Bloggers Conference with his wife, Gabrielle. So we're going to be talking with Ryan about blogging and social media. Don't forget that next week is London International Wine Fair. That's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday next week. So I'll be there recording a few shows. I've got some great interviews lined up while I'm down that ways. But before we finish up, how did you get on with our mystery wine
grape variety. It was, of course, Merlot. Hopefully you got that one. Anyway, until next week. Oh, I forgot the quote. And this week's quote I actually got off the toilet wall at Pegasus Bay in Waipara, which is a wine-producing region just north of Christchurch. I did an interview while I was down there and popped into the toilet, saw loads of great wine quotes. So I snapped them all up with my camera, snappity, snap, snap, snap. And this one I quite like. It is, "Nothing can be more frequent than the occasional drink." Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.